those lovely stories have come to mean something quite irrelevant to this matter of Messiah. But I'm just suggesting that this is a question that might well be asked. There are always literal people around and want to know, well, if that's your name, people come, Pendle Hill, well, where's the hill? Of course, Pendle Hill should be nothing to name, but they're just so literally minded. Show us the hill. And that could be said for a great many other terms. Well, here you have Jesus the Anointed. Well, the convert would say, that's all very well, but while you're telling me stories about him, what's the story we got his name, his term anointed from? I don't know. I'm just raising this question. And that, you see, again, belongs to the problems of, it ought to belong to the problem of inception, initiation, inauguration, which is the general topic we are working on tonight. There's a question, if Jesus was to be the Messiah, when did the role of Messiah begin? To be a Messiah is to have a job. When did it start? And how did it start? Wasn't there a time when he began his career? Was there a period of preparation? Was there a period of vocation? Early Christians were great to the idea that God calls you to do something. Every prophet was called to be a prophet. Was Jesus called to be what he was? If you look for that, I think once more you'll go back, won't you, to the baptism and the story there. That comes as near as anything we can get. You have the story of Amos being called to be a prophet. You told that Jeremiah had been called to be a prophet. When was Jesus called to be a prophet? Well, the nearest we have to answer that question is, I think, the story of the baptism. And you may remember that immediately after that, the devil takes him to task and says, well, if you're going to be the Son of God, how about this and that? It makes a very tidy arrangement to say that at that occasion, on that important meeting between the Baptist and Jesus at the Jordan River, there was the call to service. And except for some preliminary thinking and retirement, the beginning of his ministry. He retires for 40 days, and then from then on, he starts out on his job. Carries it right on from there. This is a very favorite view, especially with people that think that a man's career often has a starting point that he can date, place, and that this would be the time. Although, again, they very much hesitate, as in that verse about Jesus growing, to think that it was really a call to Jesus. Was there ever a time when he didn't know he was called? That's not so welcome. But there were early Christians, and it may be that Mark was among them, who thought that actually this time was decided upon not merely by Jesus, but by God. And that what God in effect says to this Galilean Jew who grew up normally in a Jewish home, today I pick you out for a role. That's the way the call seems to come to some people, doesn't it? Prophets. And it would be entirely appropriate if the early Christian should think to himself, it was now that not only was the Baptist told and the disciples standing round told that Jesus was God's son, but that it was brought home to Jesus himself that now, well, this view is goes under the technical name among scholars of adoptionism. That is that, as with most people that are given jobs, they don't inherit them. They're not born in advance for them. The job is delivered to them at a given time. And that God, at this point, took this person and installed him as his Messiah, and to do what the Messiah was to do. The word son would be very appropriate for that, because Son of God means the agent of God, and needn't have any biological meaning at all. And Son of God is practically the same as Messiah. And if God had said, the voice had said, thou art my beloved one, which is perhaps a name for the Messiah, or thou art my son, thou art my agent, that would have been appropriate. So that a very common view is that that there were some early Christians that regarded the inception of Jesus' role as being a divine choice, as indeed he once looked around the nations of the world and picked out the nation of Israel and said, this will be my son. And he took him out of Egypt, did he not? Out of Egypt have I called my son, says one of the old prophets. And this would have been a parallel act to the agent of God, this great agent of God, in the year, shall I say, about 30 A.D., that this person was then installed by God as his Messiah. The Gospels are quite clear that Jesus' mission began after John the Baptist had his mission. That's clear. Passage I read in Acts just now said, after John came preaching in Galilee, then Jesus came. A little difference in the Gospels, whether John was imprisoned before Jesus began his preaching, or whether he was imprisoned after Jesus began his preaching. But in general, there is the mission of Jesus, of John, and that is followed promptly by the mission of Jesus. Whether they overlapped or not is the only question that's not clear. Or if you want to be less precise about the time of it, can't you simply say, and this I'm sure the Christians would have said, that the mission of Jesus came in God's good time. We don't need to date it. All we need to know is that when he had decided to do it, God had fixed upon a time, and when the time came, then he sent forth his son, born of a woman, born under the law. I'm quoting Paul, am I not? And that the mission began at a time that was in God's control and was a fitting time, the ripe time. They were great believers then in things being done in the fullness of time. And so that whenever it was part of a program of God. And we don't need to bother too much about our view of the date if we can be assured of that. Well, now another question. What about the ancestry of this person? Once more, I suspect that preconceived notions were already in the air, and that the question wasn't asked merely the way you go to the genealogical society and say, I'd like to look up some ancestors, you know. I don't know who they were. It wasn't that way. There were appropriate ancestors already expected. One type of Messiah was to be a king, and there was one royal line, the line of David of the tribe of Judah and the grandchild of Jesse, and that the Messiah should belong to that line. I mentioned three stages in it. Judah, one of the 12 tribes, Jesse, the period of the judges, and David, a king, two or three generations later, of the family. And as you know, that family held the throne in at least part of Israel as long as the independent nation existed. The southern kingdom were all of them kings of that dynasty. A very fixed dynasty, and David, of course, a favorite king, favorite to God, a man after his own heart, God says of him. And therefore, that seemed rather predetermined. Though not so predetermined in when Jesus was born as it would have been earlier. When in 516 they restored the temple and the separate government, they had a high priest, to be sure, but they also had a king, and that king was Zerubbabel of the family of David. But meanwhile, 200 years before Christ, another family had risen to the fore, not of the tribe of David at all, but of the priestly family of Levi. There, that group of persons who won Israel's independence, called the Maccabees, and more rose to the fore until they absorbed these monarchical rulers, all the functions both of priest, high priest, and of king. And they belonged to the tribe of Levi. And it was from that time on there was some doubt as to whether the Messiah would be of the tribe of David. The Qumran scrolls, very interestingly, show us the expectation of Messiah in another Jewish group, parallel with the Christians in date, and they had more than one Messiah. Of course, that's one way of settling it. And they had a Messiah of the family of Aaron, which of course is the priestly family, and then they had what they called the Messiah of Israel. I suppose the tribe of Levi next to the tribe of Judah would be the most likely to have, you'd guess, the Messiah for. And there are some books which talk about, one of them is called the Testament of Levi, which imply that the hope that the Messiah would come from the tribe of Levi was pretty strong. Although one would think that he would be more of a priest than of a military political ruler. I suppose it all depends on what they thought that Jesus was. Whether they would feel that if they thought of him as a second David, which would be a political ruler, then the David ancestry would be a natural one to stress. Well, let me remind you that there were early Christians that regard him as a descendant of David. At least if you call his father an evidence. His father, Joseph, is twice traced by two different genealogies back to David. Two of the Gospels give what purports to be a father-to-son line going back to David and farther, of course, but at least through David. On the other hand, the Gospel of Mark, which has no genealogy, reports a very curious conversation where Jesus raises this question. He says, "Now the scribes say that the Christ will be the son of David." But David, in addressing the Messiah, says, "The Lord said to my Lord, sit on my right hand while I make thine enemies thy footstool." And David, therefore, in that "the Lord said to my Lord," is evidently talking about what God said to the Messiah. That's the way it's understood. And David calls the Messiah my Lord. Well, now, as we all know, no father would ever refer to a descendant as my Lord. And therefore, doesn't it look rather as though a descendant of David was ruled out of the Messiahship by this passage in the Psalms. If you don't get that right off the bat, now that I've told it, I wouldn't be surprised. But I believe I am correctly dealing with the passage. Now, Jesus doesn't say what the answer is. In fact, this is a question he asked the other people, you know. You know what an astute teacher he was, and when he was asked a question, he mostly replied by asking a question back. And this is an example of that technique. Not entirely extinct in the teaching profession, but not always welcome. And that's what was practiced on this occasion. But I just mentioned that to suggest that while the same gospel, a few verses away, allows a blind man to address Jesus, "Oh, Son of David, have mercy on me," that this passage, both of them embodied in the same gospel, you see, nevertheless, rather looks the other way, or at least it leaves you with a doubt on this question. And it's funny for Jesus to talk in this indirect way. If he had, like some people, assured himself of a certain chosen genealogy and made a lot of it in his own mind, doesn't sound to me like the way the members of the Welcome Society or the Daughters of the Mayflower or the people like that impersonal way in which they talk about these alleged claims and credentials for this or that role. All right. Where was he to be born? Some preconceived notions about that. At least if he was of Davidic descent, Bethlehem would be the place. On the other hand, there was a very stubborn tradition that he was born in Nazareth. And the gospel writers thought about those two things. And one of them, John says, this can't be the Messiah. He has the people say, "This can't be the Messiah. Can anything good come out of Nazareth? And when the Messiah comes, won't he come from Bethlehem, the home of David?" And so they the people that made these remarks, just counted Jesus out. He didn't qualify. You couldn't put him in the handbook of the Welcome Society because he didn't have the proper place of birth. By Christian Herder in Massachusetts, he had the misfortune to be born in the wrong place. He couldn't qualify for a vice president of the United States, or at least there's a good deal of doubt if he could.